This episode of Does Not Compute is brought to you by Datadog. Modern web applications connect with dozens and dozens of services at the minimum. Datadog makes it easy to keep track of all the information coming from those systems. Out of the box, they integrate with over 200 services like AWS, Slack, Postgres, and Kubernetes. Have something else to monitor? They make that easy too, with tools to help you build any custom integrations you need. Lots of services provide access to metrics, but that isn't enough. Datadog helps you visualize and then act on all that data. They provide tools like end-to-end request tracking, alert forecasting, and anomaly detection, which help you make sense of your whole stack. They've also got pre-built and fully customizable dashboards, which make it easier to get the information you need at a glance. Thousands and thousands of companies rely on Datadog to help them collect, visualize, and act on the metrics from all their systems. Check out datadog.com/doesnotcompute to learn more about how they can help you. When you sign up that link and create your first dashboard, they'll send you a free t-shirt. So make sure to visit datadog.com/doesnotcompute today to learn more and sign up. Man, it's hot. We're in Tucson, man. It's really hot. After 6 years of Santa Cruz and then San Francisco, I am not adequately prepared for this weather.
It's 34 here.
34 degrees Fahrenheit?
Yeah.
It's about 90 here.
Well, I think what makes that 90 worse is that you're in a tube. You're in a tube of toothpaste right now.
A metal tube, yeah. Yeah, we have the back door open and the front window open and a fan running above, which is hopefully not horrible for the recording.
What you need to do is you need to find a place of elevation and you need to point the back of your van into the wind, if there is any wind.
Right, use the tube shape to our advantage. Yes.
A wind tunnel, basically. That's the worst, man. It was so stupid. So stupid. Someone had a bright idea. We were touring one time on this bus, and someone was like, oh, it's getting so hot in here. We need to cover the windows up. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go find some food. I'll see you later. Because I could have vetoed it at that point. And I was like, I just didn't care enough, and I didn't think that they were going to do this. But what they did was they took like this gaff tape. Thankfully, it wasn't duct tape, because otherwise I would have been really mad. If you're not familiar, gaff tape, or like painter's tape, doesn't leave a sticky residue, so you could just take it off of stuff and it won't leave behind any. It's not super sticky like duct tape is. It's usually used for like wrapping up cords. So anyway, I come back and they had lined all the windows with black trash bags and taped them off there.
Oh no. That's really unfortunate. So we have Reflectix panels that we cut for our windows, which work great against the heat. But yeah, the trash bags wouldn't. That would.
Like, what are you doing? You made it worse. You made it worse in here. It's so dumb. But yeah, the form factor. It's because like it's hot in a house. That's one thing. It's bigger. There's more air movement. I think what's getting you is the lack of air movement.
Yeah, and I mean, we just have everything open. We don't really run the AC because we haven't been plugged in for over 2 weeks, I think, at this point.
That's crazy.
We've just been off solar, and we recharge fully pretty much every day, even cloudy days for the most part. It's going really well, but not so well that we could really run the air conditioning. But we just have like a fan, and it's been okay, you know. Just drink lots of water, lots of ice in beverages, and it's doable.
Yeah, it's doable.
I mean, people live for a long time in these areas without air conditioning, so this is not like pioneering work or anything.
Right. Yeah. They live for a long time without any sort of structure's not the right word, but like any sort of like cooling engineered systems that I know of, that I'm aware of, and maybe they had that. I don't know. I haven't studied it, but yeah, it does get pretty brutal. Because I did tour a lot in the South. Like Alabama was especially brutal. Georgia was pretty rough too. But I remember like the hottest days I ever experienced were in Louisiana and Alabama.
Yeah, that's kind of what. Right now it's hot, but it's real dry. And as we keep heading east, it's gonna stay hot and get hotter because of the time of year, and it's gonna get real wet.
It gets
too,
wet.
So
everything is wet. Yep, everything's moist.
Yeah.
Slightly moist. Yeah, it was terrible. Terrible.
Well, I'm real psyched for the rest of my trip now.
No, just don't tape trash bags to your windows and you're fine.
Yeah, right.
I was so mad. I was like, what?
Oh,
whose idea was this? It was like swampy in there. It was the worst. I'm trying to think that may, I don't know. So like I was upset then. I kind of let these stories out every show, like a new one comes out, especially because you're talking about traveling. But I think maybe one of the maddest times I've ever been wasn't actually heat related, but it was because this guy was driving this bus and he wasn't particularly good at driving the bus. So we had two buses and he was going to park a bus and he was parking it too close. So as he was trying to straighten the thing out, the buses kept getting closer and closer. I saw this from a distance, and he ended up ramming, like not ramming, but like side swiping the two buses together, and it popped a few of the windows.
Oh my god!
And I was like, "How do you? Okay, so your mirrors are clearly wider than the area that you have to park in. So why would you try? Why would you try it?" And to make matters worse, it wasn't in like a tight place either. It was in a big parking lot, so there was plenty of room. He just wasn't thinking. And this was the same driver also clipped a car once too when he was turning.
Oh, geez. I've noticed that about parking lots. Like even when there's a bunch of room, sometimes I'll park and then somebody will park like right next to me and just chill there, just hang out. And it's like, that's kind of weird because there's 30 other spots, man.
Mm-hmm.
Very strange parking lot etiquette.
Well, there's like two, class is the bad word. I'm trying to fade this word out, but there's like two different types of people. There's like the people that are aware of their surroundings and the people that are not. And Jamie also somehow is a magnet for people that are not aware of their surroundings. So they'll like 60 to zero into a parking spot and they open the door and ding her car. It happens all the time. And you can see those people coming because they're not, you could tell that they're not paying attention to what's going on around them. They're just like fly. Their mission is to do whatever they're doing inside the store. So they're not thinking about parking. They're not thinking about distance. They're not thinking about how far should I open this door. They're just kind of existing in that moment.
Like on autopilot. It's not being present and paying attention to what you're doing.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's something, I mean, driving a lot more recently than I have in quite a few years. I'm noticing that more and more, like how many people, like you'll see somebody just kind of swerving around and speeding up and slowing down. You drive past them and they're literally just looking at their phone, like not even trying to hide it a little bit, just hanging out, just like browsing the internet and responding to texts and stuff.
Right.
And that sort of behavior, it's that same thing. Like people just not being present for the thing that they're doing right now and trying to do something else at the same time.
That always freaks me out because, if in the context of driving, like people always say, especially with motorcycles, like you're not the one that's dangerous. You're not the one causing the problem. It's like the motorcycle might be dangerous, but it's the other people that are more dangerous than the motorcycle. So a motorcycle itself isn't inherently that dangerous. It's the people that aren't paying attention. And my cousin was killed on a motorcycle. He was sitting at a red light and someone hit him from behind because they weren't paying attention. They were on their phone actually. So I think about that kind of stuff a lot when I'm, especially when I was in the Bay Area, like riding my bike, because I don't have a car, so I rode my bike everywhere. And so I'm thinking, you kind of get into autopilot when you're in a bike, especially. And I'm sure people from the Bay Area might find this funny, but people just like hauling through stop signs or people just hauling through stoplights on their bikes because they're on a bike and they can skirt it through quickly. But you never know when someone's not actually paying attention or someone else is in a hurry. And they're doing the same thing that you're doing at the same time. You know, you're just not aware of each other. And I had a few close calls in Santa Cruz because I was kind of just on autopilot, had my music on, thinking about work and just cruising on my morning, you know, commute. And I don't know, like someone that's not usually there or someone else is in a hurry and, you know, that's all it takes to cause a problem.
Yeah, that's something I'm really trying to focus on more is being present with whatever task I'm doing. I guess not even trying, but it's just kind of happening to me throughout this trip, I've noticed. Mm-hmm. because my day tends to be a lot more disjointed, more broken up, because I have to travel, I have to dump the tanks, I have to fill up on water, we have to do shopping, we have to deal with the dogs. You know, it's just a never-ending stream of stuff that I'm trying to do throughout my day while I'm doing work, while I'm doing whatever else I need to be doing. And it's just being able to context switch and really dive deep into something quickly and then pull yourself back out and focus entirely on a different thing for a little bit and then, again, pull yourself back out and focus on a different thing is it can be pretty difficult, but mm-hmm. but I think that is important, being able to focus in and not try to do two things at once, but say, hey, okay, for the next 30 minutes, I only have 20 minutes. I only have 30 minutes to focus on this, but I'm going to really jump in and just hit it hard. And that's been a very useful skill for me to develop a little bit more, useful muscle to flex, I guess.
A lot of times for me, it's about slowing down a little bit, especially if I think I only have 30 minutes and then I'm already thinking on the next 30 minutes, like what I have to do after that time frame. It helps for me to just to slow down and just relax. I don't know. Obviously everyone's different, but that's, to me, that's kind of where some of that comes into play. If I'm in a hurry, I'm not really relaxed. I'm not really focusing on one thing. I'm focusing on many things and focusing on the multitasking itself, which doesn't always help me. So I've been trying to do the same thing, especially with DK, especially with being a first-time CTO. So that's something I've been Googling a little bit more, and like someone DM'd me. I'll put his handle in show notes because he's now a friend of the show. But he basically DM'd me. He's like, hey, you might be interested in this this thread. And it was basically a CTO saying, hey, if you are a first-time CTO, how do you learn? How do you grow? Where do you go for information? And so I started looking at that. But I also noticed that a lot of the articles about being a CTO talk about how many different things you're doing or have to worry about, and that doesn't help me at all. It doesn't help me actually do any better work. It just helps me be aware of more things, if that makes sense. So at the same time as I'm trying to learn about this stuff, I'm just trying to also slow down, not work faster. I'm trying to work slower. I'm trying to do a better job, trying to consider more things as I'm doing the work, because it is really tiring getting into working quickly, moving fast and shipping stuff, but also having to change the stuff that you're always shipping. So you're always shipping changes to the changes that you just shipped. And it's not really sustainable for a small company, especially with two developers, to do that kind of stuff. So just thinking about slowing down, thinking about being more mindful and thinking about being present on what I'm doing, like you're saying, is really helpful in considering, okay, if I change this, what are the effects? Because at first it was like we could just change all the stuff all the time because it was MVP status. So making a change here didn't really have a cascading effect, whereas now it does, right?
Yeah, and I know we've talked about this externally, but I'm not sure whether or not we've talked about it on the show. But just the idea that we were an MVP and now we're at the stage where we can't be an MVP anymore. Mm-hmm. We can't act like an MVP anymore. We need to grow this into something that could be sustained over many years and built on. And isn't going to be a nightmare to make changes to. Isn't going to be just constant cascading failures. So like you change one thing and then 30 other things break. And that is kind of how what happens with a lot of MVPs. Just because there isn't time at that phase in a company's life cycle. There isn't time to really. There isn't time to spare to actually go through and really consider everything. You just gotta make the whole thing first. And now we're at the point where we have a base functional thing, and we can take that and really tweak all the dials and knobs and levers and gears to get it working exactly the way it needs to.
Yeah. It's so different because I keep talking about the articles that I read. Like anytime you type in CTO, the top ones that come up are like, should CTOs code and all that stuff. And it's just funny. So what dawned on me earlier today when I was looking at things is our company is very, very different from the majority of these companies that I'm reading about, or our roles are very, very different from the majority of people that are writing about these roles that I'm trying to learn about. Because there are two of us. We didn't take a whole bunch of funding. We don't have a bunch of employees coming in. It's just two of us that are on the tech side anyway. So even, you know, there's sound advice in these articles, but it just doesn't necessarily apply most times because our focus is different. Our pacing is different. Workloads are different. It's just different. It's just a different scenario. And I guess it's kind of hard. Like people, when people write about stuff, they write about what they know and they write about what they're experiencing and where they're at, you know? So a lot of these people are writing about these startups that they're working on, and that's what they know. And it just so happens to not fit our model or fit what we're doing, which is okay. But it's just, that's what I'm learning. It's just different, you know? So I'm trying to like, I can't just take advice from these articles one for one, you know, because our situation is different. So I had like a lot of it just comes back to us and learning and being present enough to say, okay, there's something to learn from this situation and we should make a change here, or we should institute this new thing here. So for example, the functional spec documents that we talked about, I'm constantly adding more of those. And when changes are made to them, I make sure to add a comment and I add the people that need to know about it and say, hey, are you this? So you're aware, this is how it works now. And, you know, most of the time that comes from a talk that we've had, but it's so nice now to have it codified in a place and also have the paper trail saying who has acknowledged it and when. That's also kind of nice to have the peace of mind. But for example, I haven't like read anybody talking about doing that. You know, I haven't, most of the CTO stuff is more about the big picture kind of thing and not what actually makes your business run from day to day and not kind of grind to a halt.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with articles on medium.com and not just Medium specifically, sure. But as an example, yeah. there's so many articles out there on being a CTO or being a whatever, being a first time, being a second time, being a serial entrepreneur, whatever you know.
Yes.
There's a million of those articles. And the reason there's a million of those articles is because different approaches work better or worse or not at all or incredibly well for different people. Like, and there's not a single right answer. The only right answer, to my mind at least, is that introspection. It's always looking at your own process and saying, which part of this is working for me? Which part of this isn't working for me? How can I improve this? How can I make this better for me and my team? It's not, there is no magic bullet. If there was one magic bullet, then there would be one article on Medium.
Right. Yeah.
Instead of hundreds of thousands of articles.
Right. On the same topic. Yeah. It's just, I don't know, interesting. Because you talk about being present and we've talked about introspection and how important introspection is and being able to have the clarity of mind to see past what you're working on, what you're struggling with, and kind of like zoom out from that, if that makes sense. Just kind of being able to get at things from a different perspective. So I think maybe a lot of being, this may be weird to say it, but maybe being a lot of being like junior and new and, because I've been talking to a lot of junior developers and they've been like pinging me and asking me questions and all that stuff, which is amazing. But one thing that I always see that's common is there's a mountain in front of them and they don't see around the mountain. They can't see above the mountain. They can't see to the left or the right of the mountain. They see the mountain. And I think that where we're at, and not saying that I'm like a qualified senior developer or whatever, because that's not what I'm trying to get at. What I'm getting at is that there's like a frame of mind that you earn through practice and that you earn through being in the thick of things that allows you to be able to see to the left and right of the mountain and being able to recognize this is just a mountain and behind it is a valley. And that there are ways to get to that valley. There are ways to get around this mountain and being able to zoom out and see kind of the bigger picture.
I think one of the things that I've noticed the most over the last few years, I guess, in my own attitudes as a developer is before I felt like my own attitudes as a human, I guess, right. I felt a lot more that I had answers and that I understood how things should work and why things were broken and how to fix them. But more and more, I realized that I needed to spend a lot more time learning about how things work before I can have any sort of opinion on why they're broken or in what ways they're broken. Or how to fix them, perhaps most importantly, how to fix them. And I think as a developer specifically, I mean, this is one of those things where now we're using all these linters and stuff and these auto formatters and all these things that are making our decisions for us. I have less opinions about those things now.
Yeah.
I just want that to be done and I want it to work. Whereas before, that was something that I really, really cared about a lot more. And I don't think it's necessarily wrong. I think having opinions, having strong opinions on things can be very good and is generally important. But I think spending more time just thinking about process and like how, like the human side of software development, not so much the software side of software development.
Yeah.
It seems just increasingly important to me.
Right. Yeah. Having like just removing that, because obviously every developer does have preferences on tabs versus spaces or how to format white space, but removing that from the equation, even if you have to make some concessions, because there are some things about the Elixir formatter that I'd prefer it a different way, but just because it's automated, I'd just leave it. It's fine. It's good enough because I have other hills that I need to be dying on, so to speak.
When you really think about it, man, those are just not interesting questions. Those are not interesting discussions or arguments to be having, tabs or spaces, or any of those kind of like syntax things, any of that stuff. I'm way more interested in saying, okay, what works or doesn't work for this team and why, and how can we improve that even further?
Yeah.
That's a way cooler challenge to me, and I think a way more useful question to be asking yourself as an individual and as a team.
Right. So for like a practical example, I've gone from trying to configure linters for tabs versus spaces and making sure things are two spaces and making sure all this stuff to, okay, how do I make sure that my sales team and my customer support team are on the same page when it comes to features and how they work? How does one do that?
Right. And that, I mean, really, that almost sounds like a chief product or something.
Right.
But, you know, these roles are, they mean whatever they mean.
And even like a level beyond that. So there are great tools for this, right? So there are so many tools for building up knowledge bases and for building out documentation for things. But to take it a step farther, you could ask yourself, okay, how do I make sure that these people are on the same page, but also how do I make sure that it's easy for them to stay on the same page? Because I can say, you need to use this app and this app and this app for these different things, but that makes their job harder because then they're going from trying to translate from a user's perspective, trying to figure out, you know, what browser they're using, what version they're using, how did this happen, what should have happened, how should this thing work? How do I answer their question? Does their question even make sense? You know, they're kind of, because that's difficult. That's not an easy job. Then they have to translate all of that stuff and they have to figure out, okay, where do I go to find this? Is it in Intercom? Is it in Google Docs? Is it in Notion? Where actually is this information? And they have to go and translate the technicalese that I wrote, you know, into something that'll make sense. So that's a hard job. So If I can make a few changes to my workflow, even if maybe I like Notion a lot better, but Google Docs works better for the people I work with, that's something that I need to figure out. Maybe we work with Google Docs. Okay, how do we make a Google Docs flow work? Do we just have a folder in Google Drive? Do we have like a specific naming structure so that these people can find this stuff? Like, you know, so it's so much more than just, you know, like the small technical decisions. Do we use Vue? Do we use React? It's there's so much more to it than that. Then I'm glad that we have kind of the stuff picked out for us that we like. I'm glad that we're on technologies that we like with Elixir and Vue and things that we feel productive with. And it's amazing to actually be happy using technology we're using every day. And I think it makes it easier for me to be able to focus on those questions, like the sales and support staff.
It's awesome to have those tech decisions made for us and be happy, not made for us, we made those decisions.
Sure.
But it's nice to have those tech decisions done with and out of the way and be happy with our workflow. On the tech side of things, like, really, I'm pretty happy with the tools that we're using right now.
Yeah.
Most of the issues that we're running into are issues around communication and workflow. And like, again, I find those, now that I'm at a place where I'm, you know, I always want to be a better developer. But now that I'm at a place where I'm relatively comfortable with what I need to be, with the tools I need to be using day to day, and feel confident in them and don't have to spend so much time thinking about them and researching them, now I actually get to do more fun stuff, more communication, more making little videos
designing.
To explain features.
You've been killing it, man.
Design stuff. Yeah, it's just like, it's...
The challenge is me.
Is, to me, it has always just been a means to an end.
Right.
And this kind of way of looking at it is really, it emphasizes that for me.
I can kind of tell that you're starting to step into your own with this stuff because of that very reason, right? I mean, I've known you for a long time, and I've known that you like doing the videos and you like doing the whole picture sort of thing, right? Which is amazing for me because it's helpful for everybody and it makes my job a little bit easier. But I can tell you're coming to your own because you're starting to do more of those things. And so what's really awesome, and to give everyone a picture of what that means, is like, okay, so you assign a feature to yourself. And then as you're working on the feature, everyone else in the general channel gets an actual walkthrough video with like a cool beat in the background, like explaining how it works in like, you know, text overlays and stuff. And then we could almost straight send that to a user, which, you know, like we could actually use that video that you made to help sell a potential store. So there's a real value in that sort of work and that sort of thinking, beyond just it's fun and it's something extra. It's very valuable, you know, because it communicates very clearly to our coworkers in a very concise manner. This is how this thing works. Here's the visual of it. This is what it looks like. Here's where you can find it. You know what I mean? Here's the rationale for everything, which is amazing because for me, I'm like doing my own thing, you know, trying to keep my head above water, trying to figure out, you know, how, trying to answer a question. Okay, this person asked me this question 3 times now. That means that there's something broken in the flow, right? So how do I fix that? How do I make sure that they don't ask me a 4th time? You know, so it's really nice to come into the chat and just be like, oh, snap, you know, this feature is almost done. And it's like presented, you basically presenting what you've been working on instead of saying, hey, this is done. You actually have like a way to present that to everybody else, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's something that I've always wanted to do. But it's hard to find the time because doing those sorts of things it is really cool, but it's not free. It does take some amount of time and real effort. Like it's not just something you snap your fingers and it's done. And it's tough if you're not at a place where you're really comfortable with the tools, where you've put in this effort to get comfortable with these tools and you can be productive with them quickly. Like if I wasn't pretty comfortable with Vue, there's no way I would be able to do this stuff on top of actually getting the work done.
Yep.
And that's just super nice. I think that's been one of the biggest benefits to me of having a tech stack that we're happy with, is that I'm able to go and again do something that I at least think is more interesting and just cooler. It, to me, something that I've always loved is that whole package, like you said, being able to take something from start to finish, do the design, do the development, produce marketing materials or whatever around it. And yeah, I just feel like the tools that we're using now are really enabling that in a big way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's cool to say that, and we've even been making changes to how those things work. So when you came in, I sometimes have the idea, like it might be cool to show some of the like listeners, like have some code samples and stuff, but maybe I don't want to do that with some of the original code. But we've been changing it, right? So, I mean, we're trying to get smarter about it because obviously we're working towards Nux and a SPA and all that stuff for the reasons that we've talked about. But we're kind of like embracing that now. So instead of saying, hey, Lindsay, we need a month to get this pushed onto a SPA, and she'd probably say yes, you know, she trusts us that much that we're, you know, if we said we need to take a whole month and not do anything else and do this, she'd probably allow it. But that maybe not responsible on our part. So what we've done instead is we're continuing to work on new things, but we're also, as things are built out, everything new is done via an API endpoint and some Vue components. And what that's allowed us to do is kind of rethink our Vue setup and also use some of the new techniques we've learned. So like the transparent wrappers I learned from Chris Fritz, which is really cool. So now all of our text inputs just use one Vue component, and that all wraps up like a label, any help text describing the input itself, any error styles, any error messages, all that stuff. So we have like what input, we have a number input, we have a slug input for generating UL friendly things. We have the currency input. And what's really cool is that we did some of that like refactoring, and now all the new stuff is using it. Man, we're moving so much quicker, and it's quality. I think more than anything, it's actually a better product in doing that. And I think that says a lot about Vue and how easy it is to use, like how low the barrier entry is on this stuff. But
the barrier entry is low, but it's also amazing to me how flexible Vue is in that you can start with a project that has no Vue, but has already existed for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And start adding Vue into it and keep adding Vue into it while making changes, while adding new features, and just slowly convert it over. It doesn't have to be an all or nothing. It doesn't have to be a, okay, stop the presses. We need a month. We need 2 months. We need however long to rebuild this in Vue. You can just, you can iterate and move step by step and really have a good process without feeling... without being messy about it.
Right, yeah.
You can do it in a very clean way and go through and add these new components and then splice those new components in where they belong as you move over the next, you know, however many weeks as you're working on other features, building new things out. And I think that's so cool because that's such a... It's easy to look at a project and be like, oh, Vue would be great to build this hypothetical thing that doesn't exist and we're building from scratch. But that is so infrequently the actual case.
Yep.
When you're working on a project in the real world.
Yeah. In fact, Sarah from the core team has a good example on, I think, Smashing Magazine, basically saying, here's how you could use Vue on a regular website if you wanted to replace jQuery. Here's how you could do it without any compilation process, nothing. Here's how you could do it, which I think is killer because that's something a lot of people ask me is like, how, you know, is, for example, a friend of the show, Drew, asked me this week, you know, is Vue for apps or can you actually just use it on websites too? And I linked him that article. I was like, if you didn't want to use jQuery, you could use Vue instead. And you can accomplish the same thing on a site without a compilation process or anything. In fact, I think when we first started using Vue, that's how I was doing it anyway.
I've definitely built out at least a handful of projects using Vue like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it says a lot about the tooling, I think. But that's what I'm most excited about is just a better product. So we redid our onboarding flow, which obviously like the onboarding flow equals money, right? So if someone gets stuck there, there's a good chance that customer might not convert, you know? That customer could be frustrated, have a low opinion of a site, this thing doesn't work, etc. So in converting that flow to just a few Vue components and a few like that's where like the input component came from and the number and currency things came from. In converting that to Vue, we went from somewhat of a frustrating experience, not because the things were broken, but it's because a lot of the users that we have coming on, and not like customers, I mean like store owners, they're, for lack of a better word, they're just not tech savvy. They're not that they're stupid.
And nor should they be.
Right.
Like that's not their job. They shouldn't be expected to do that. And that's literally why this company exists. That's why Design Collective exists, because those people, these startups, shouldn't have to have that expertise.
I've learned a lot about empathy on this project because, like you said, they shouldn't be. But a lot of the times the developer's attitude is that they should learn. If they're going to use this, they should learn how to use it. While there might be something to be said about that, I think that's the wrong approach. And so, for example, a common thing that we got back a lot was, oh, the credit card. So like most of the time when someone says something, they say X doesn't work. And funnily enough, we started noticing that when they say X doesn't work, what they mean was they didn't notice that there was actually a message saying what happened. Your CVC was wrong for your credit card, or you didn't add this input, or you didn't fill this field out. So to them, the form is broken. It doesn't work. To us, oh, you just skipped this part and you're not noticing this this message. They don't see it because to them, it's such a technical thing. They're seeing the whole picture, not the individual pieces, if that makes sense. Like I said, the whole mountain metaphor, right? So if you're not familiar or something, you tend to like take in everything at once. So you miss details, you miss things. And so it's not the user's fault if they're missing error messages saying, hey, your CVC was incorrect, and we get a report saying your form is broken because I can't add my card, right? That means that we should redesign it and make those things clearly apparent so that way they don't miss those messages. And that's where Vue came in, because now we're using a library called VValidate. And so on the inputs on onboarding, they get immediate feedback. If they tab into a field and they tab out without filling it out and it's required, the thing is highlighted in red and there's a message underneath saying, hey, this field is required. You know, so,
and so that's something where we've taken a step to improve the user experience. So stores who are onboarding are actually having a much better experience now during that process. And we've also moved towards Vue, towards Nuxt, towards being a full single page app. So it's like we are able to, Vue is just so flexible in that way, where we're able to keep adding features and keep improving things for users while still improving things towards our end technical goals as well.
Yeah.
Which to me is just, it's mind blowing. It's so incredibly cool and powerful. And it's just working without a whole lot of thought, really.
Yeah,
we're just kind of doing it.
Even so,
it feels very natural.
Yeah, so now we have like all the client side validation in, you know. So we're like disabling buttons if the form's not valid, and it pops up a message saying, "Hey, you know, you're missing this field or whatever." If they try to click save, so you know, we're skipping a whole round trip to the server there. But also, what's really cool is we're able to come up with a really easy way. It's just two functions actually that takes any error from the server. And it injects it into vValidate's validator instance. So now, if as long as the name you're using on the input matches the key that the server sends back, we have our regular client-side validation, but then the API-side error validation stuff is injected into that same spot automatically, which is super cool. You have to do nothing extra except for include a function in your catch case. But that's like a, like you said, a practical example where, you know, it wasn't the user's fault, maybe, because we should be accommodating to them. We should be holding their hand more. And so that's what we did. And Vue just made it really easy. And also because of, you know, converting some of those inputs, we were also to slap those inputs everywhere else. And so we automatically benefit from that work that we did once. Just super cool. But I think maybe that's one of my, I feel like that's where I've grown the most, maybe, in the past year, is becoming familiar with my technology, that I can focus on things like this, and that I can kind of change my perception on maybe this user should learn how to use the web versus maybe we're not actually as obvious as we think we are, or as smart as we think we are in building out this feature. And a lot of it comes back to kind of losing your sense of self. I'm trying to figure out like how you would say that, your pride, your ego
around features. Yeah. I feel like, because it's so easy to ship something and be happy with it and for it to make sense to you. And then when you get these bug reports, where somebody's like, this form is broken, and it's really easy to get frustrated about that and feel as though it is a personal thing, because it's something you put a chunk of your life into that, right, you will never get back. As like, that sounds kind of silly and dramatic, but I mean, it is what it is. You are putting a bit of your life into every piece of code that you write, because it's hours off of your life.
Sure.
And so it's so easy for that to feel personal, but really that person is also putting their life into using your application.
Mm-hmm. And for us, it's they're spending money, you know, and it's not like a microtransaction either. They're spending money every month, the stores are, because of our promise saying, hey, you're going to make more money if you spend this money. You know, it's an investment. And that was like a mind shift for me. It's just been interesting, because like when we first started, you know, I was hired to build an e-commerce platform. And that's not what we have. That's a portion of what we have. That's part of what we have. But our platform is a marketing platform for these stores. And so like learning has shifted, that approach had shifted and all that stuff. And the type of person that I do the most thinking about now isn't like the shopping customer. And obviously we think about that, but it's like, how do we make these stores' lives easier? Because they're already being hit hard by Amazon and these big box stores and these big websites, you know, that are trying to undercut them. But also they're busy people trying to run a business, and most of them have multiple businesses. So like most furniture store owners have a design business. They might have a manufacturing business. So they're busy people. They're also humans with families and humans with needs. They need to sleep. They need to eat. You know what I mean? They're people. And so that's what I try to keep in mind is it's so dumb if I get mad that something seems broken that I spent time on, because having that perspective of like, this is a human being and I'm spending this time on purpose so that I can make their lives easier and make them more successful in business, right? It helps me focus the shift off of myself and my feeling validated and my feeling accomplished, I guess, in something being shipped, right? So the original focus used to be the software. And now my focus has shifted more towards the people on the other side of the software, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's so important to remember. It's like I said, you are investing your life into making this thing, but these people are, the users are also investing their lives into using your application. Like it's kind of an honor in a way, like that people are willing to spend money on this and willing to spend their time on this thing that we've made. And I think that's a responsibility to continue making it better for them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's a big job, Sean.
It's hard to think about that. Like it's hard to pull back from staring at the side of a mountain, the rock that you're hanging on. when your ropes are breaking and stuff. But it's good to have discussions like this because it's encouraging, kind of. And that's why I always say, like, whenever I have a call with my boss, that I come away encouraged, because she's got the vision, and talking to the person with the vision, it helps you see past what you're, like, the wall that you're staring at, right? You can see over it. And so that's maybe one of the most important life lessons I've ever learned, was that if you find someone with a vision, if you're working for someone with a vision, talk to that person as often as you can, because they'll help you get the vision and help you see past what you're stuck on, what you're frustrated with, what you don't want to work on. You know, it helps you kind of correct your course, in a sense.
Yeah, having that perspective, having that sort of reset, it's like, oh yeah, that's why we're doing this. This is what we're actually trying to build. This is the goal. It's so powerful and so motivating, for sure.
Yeah, I think we're lucky also to have something to work on where we both get the, like, we both like the vision, right? So, like, I don't care about furniture, but I care about helping people. I care about helping people become more successful. And, you know, ideally, if they're more successful, then their families have better lives. They have better lives, you know, they're able to pay it forward. So I guess we're lucky to have a setup like that. You know, maybe not everyone does.
We are undeniably extremely, extremely lucky in what we're doing right now. But I think at the same time, sort of every project I've ever had has been like that, where it's like, I don't have to care about furniture. I don't have to care about whatever the actual thing is. All I care about, all of my goal in programming, all my goal has ever been, is to make stuff that people enjoy using.
Right.
Like, just bring a little bit of joy to the world through making something with my fingers on the computer.
Yeah.
And I think pretty much any, not any, but very nearly any, there are a whole lot of jobs out there where you can make something and have fun doing it, because you're making somebody's day a little bit nicer when you do a good job.
Yes.
And that's just a nice feeling.
It is a nice feeling. It is a nice feeling, but it is Sunday and I shan't work today, lest somebody will report me to my boss, as I've been threatened several times. Now, every time I try, like, pop up in Discord, hey, you're not supposed to be working today. I tweet about something on Twitter, someone DMs me, hey, I'll tell your boss. My dad texts me, hey, I'm gonna tell your boss.
Well, man, go enjoy that 30 degree weather. I'm gonna go enjoy this 90 degree weather.
I might play some Divinity Original Sins 2. That's a game, Paul. If you like RPGs, it's intense, and it's turn-based too. I don't know if you've ever heard of this game, Paul, but called Heroes of Might and Magic. Have you heard of that?
I've heard the name. I don't know.
It might be before your time, because I am in my midlife now. And but yeah, it's no crisis though so far, which is great. But
not yet.
It's a good game. Anyway, like, yeah, Divinity is like, if you combine like an action RPG like Diablo or Path of Exile with turn-based combat like Final Fantasy, Divinity is.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, and it's Choose Your Adventure too, so it's not like where Diablo or action RPGs, you just kind of like go through a linear story. This changes and progresses with the decisions that you make, which is really cool. Anyhow.
I'll talk to you later.
Get a washcloth and slap it on your forehead or around the back of your neck. Make it wet.
That sounds nice.
Yes. I'll talk to you later.
Take it easy, Sean. Thanks to Datadog for sponsoring this episode of DNC. If you help maintain a modern web service, chances are you have a whole fire hose of data to parse. Datadog makes it easy to aggregate all that data, visualize it, and then act on it. After you get your metrics into Datadog, they have a full suite of tools to help you visualize and act on that data, including anomaly detection, alert forecasting, and end-to-end request tracking. Check out datadog.com/doesnotcompute to start your free trial, and you'll get a free Datadog t-shirt when you make your first dashboard. California. Yeah, we started in Northern California.
Oh, really?
Yep.
And you're heading someplace?
We're doing the loop. We went south, and now we're going kind of east, and then we're going to go north when we hit the Atlantic, and then back west across the northern part is kind of the plan right now. Yeah. Yep.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. It was good to talk to you. I'm Paul, by the way.
Paul, I'm Louis.
Good to meet you. Hey, sorry about that,
man. No worries.
interesting.